Hello everyone, welcome to the next episode of Life at Apollo podcast. Today, I'm here with one of Apollo's senior QA engineers. Hello Richard, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, hello, thanks for having me.
So, how are you feeling today? Are you nervous?
Well, it's Wednesday, so it's definitely better than Monday, although it could be way better, it could be Friday, so... But actually, my Friday starts on Thursday because I have vacation on Friday, so...
Oh, that's nice, right? Convenient.
Yeah, it's a pretty good week, yeah.
So you are in a better half of the week then.
Right, yeah.
That's nice. All right, so since you are in the mood for a vacation, let's jump to the first traditional question, and that is, how long are you part of Actum Digital Company?
Yeah, so that's a bit tricky to calculate because I originally joined in 2015, in the middle of 2015, and I went through different positions there, and then I left for a while, for a couple of years, and I joined again last April, so April 2022. So all in all together, it's probably something around like 5 years, but with a break in between, so.
All right. I figured that it will be a bit complex question. For you, so I wanted you to elaborate on that topic. All right. So it's quite a while, and it seems like you liked us, so you rejoined us.
Oh yeah,
that's
right.
A good sign, exactly. Right?
yeah, for sure.
All right, so a next traditional question that I bother to ask everyone in here is, how did you get to your current position? So how did you become a QA engineer?
Oh, yeah. So, okay, so it's kind of tied to the previous one. So, I think in like 2015, I was just like in the university, working some summer jobs and stuff like Burger King and stuff like that. And one of my classmates there in the university actually was a longtime friend of one Actum employee. I don't think he's working here still, but... He was working in Actum Plus back in the day, in like content editor hub kind of thing. And they were actually looking for a couple new additions to their team because there was a couple of new projects being started, and there was still like a monthly contract, like a summer job. So that was like originally how I even like got together with Actum in general. And yeah, so it was on and off work based on the projects, and it was like content editing. And at the same time, I was like studying IT, and I always liked a bit of like programming, and was, how to say, like, I was always texting.
Fan of video games, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. That too. Yeah, that too. But like, speaking of like the other technical part, not just like video games, but yeah, it's always been very close to me. So I was curious. And I asked my team lead, and we came up with two different options or like routes I could take. One would be development, and one would be QA. This was my first time hearing the QA, so I thought it's actually some sort of like customer support, like questions and answers, right? And I feel like that what most people think first time they see this. So yeah, I tried both, but obviously for dev, I really didn't have any experience, and for QA we really didn't need it in the beginning, at least like for the QA specialist. So that's how I basically went to Misho's team, Michal Nosal, as a QA specialist in 2016. And then I remember, even since the beginning, basically we had this idea of going more towards like automation and learning some programming and stuff like that. It depended on the team, of course, but it was like, it wasn't easy starting from like zero, but that's like how it gradually became what it is right now, I would say.
Nice, nice. And are you satisfied with the, you know, choice you made?
Yeah. So far, I mean, obviously, right? I wouldn't be back here anymore. No, yeah, of course I am. Yeah, it also like is a very interesting to see after the break, because first of all, I was working in, well, Apollo didn't exist back then, but I was working in a different division whatsoever, and you know, those like two. Hang on, let me quickly count. Yeah, I think it was like 2 and something years since I left until I came back. And yeah, in those 2.5 years, like not just, you know, the QAs, but like the whole company made quite a lot of progress. Like it was interesting to return to the place that I kind of knew, because obviously a lot of the people, especially in QA department, we have some of them that like started with me, those like in 2015 or 2016, and they're still here. So I mean, that's got to count for something, right?
All right, so you like the Actum's resleeved version, right?
Yeah.
And otherwise, you know, now you are on the one end, but if you were a developer, you would have to listen to guys like you all the time.
Right, so. Exactly. I would be, yeah, exactly. I cannot imagine, like, the feel. It's basically like you have a... You know, I don't want to call QA guys bullies, yeah, but if I can like draw on the analogy of when you have like a playground, kids playing on a playground with the sand and everything, right? It's like one kid is super happy that they built this like castle-ish kind of thing. Like it kind of holds together, you know, it's not bad, nothing wrong with it. And then there is this other guy, this like other kid who just comes along and breaks it, yeah. And the first kid starts crying. Like sometimes it feels like this, right? That you're like, developers are so proud of something, and then I remember back in the day, I almost felt sorry. I was like, I'm sorry, but this is not working. Yeah, it's a weird thing. Like it's a yeah.
But like you accommodated pretty well, right? You seem to be okay with that.
Yeah. I'm mainly not talking maybe about like Actum now, but in the very beginning, it was a weird thing to get used to, that basically you're the person breaking stuff and then, you know, going back to the people who made it and say, hey, I found a mistake or something like that.
Yeah, it won't work either way, right? Because you have to have a checkup, and I believe that guys are like more satisfied that they knew it before it goes out and cause much more bigger problems. That won't be happy scenario. Sure. So
yeah, for sure. Like you can have some emotional damage, but definitely like it works for the best in general. Like for the company. Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't want to sound like that. It's always like this. That's like an exaggerated thing. But yeah, there were situations
in
other companies.
So you are just like a hidden bully, and you like bullying developers.
No, right? not me. All QAs are. No, I'm kidding. Like, it's.
Hope Vlasta is not
it really
listening
depends.
To that.
Yeah. Right. Hopefully. It really depends, yeah. But there are situations where it works pretty well, because yeah, one person cannot like check everything from all the different sides, obviously. So it's good to have.
Just for the audience who cannot see Richard, he's smiling the whole time, right? And he does that also in the office. So I'm not sure if he's feeling sorry, but he looks like he's enjoying it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Pretty serious
I never
guys,
smile,
right? Yeah.
And yeah, I take everything very
Clint
seriously.
Clint Eastwood face all the time.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah,
sure. All right. So we got through how did you get to your position. So for the audience who is not familiar with the QA, can you describe what work you do and what brought you to it? As like deeper level, like, you know, what was the thought behind it? Are you
right.
The word?
Imagine so imagine you're on a kid's playground. No, I'm kidding. So yeah, like the words QA, quality assurance, it's a very broad term, I would say, and if I just like counted for our sake, so the web applications, what we're testing in Apollo mostly, it encompasses like many different approaches. Even if I don't talk about automation, because that's like a topic for itself. But in general, testing basically means that, you have a couple of ways. There's something called like destructive testing. That's what I mentioned with the playground, right? With the sandcastles and stuff. But there's also many different like ways from which you need to look at the application. So for example, if I take a look at it like in Discovery website, what we do, it's a web application. Of course, we have some acceptance criteria that there is this new component which needs to do A, B, and C. So mm-hmm. We need to check that it can do indeed A, B, and C. Sometimes we need to also check that it does not need to do D and E, right? Mm-hmm. That's also like part of it. There's a lot of unwritten work sometimes. And there are people who obviously do that more, do that less. Depends on the situation. But that's just like functional thing. That's like one way to look at it. What we also do is, for example, we need to test, and it's a big topic, especially like on the Discover, in like our client, Christie's, right? It's the accessibility, like web accessibility. Mm-hmm. Together with the front-end guys, we're making sure that the applications or the solutions that we're delivering are up to the standard and they are actually accessible for people with different types of disabilities. And they are actually also compliant with this standard, this WCAG or WCAG. I never know how to pronounce it properly. For example, you have like screen readers and stuff like that. So that's, it's still testing, right? But it's like completely different to the functional requirements that we were talking about from before. Also, you have stuff like performance. So let's say the web page doesn't take 2.5 years to load up, right? That's also stuff that we measure. And we have some reports from it. We're discussing this with developers. We also do stuff like testing in, let's say you have this one web page, this one component. If I just take the like simplest example, right? Mm-hmm. There's some sort of banner with like a link, with a button with link or something like mm-hmm. that. You also need to make sure that, you know, it works nice, but also that it looks how it's supposed to. So according to the design, and we're talking many different browsers can maybe, break the design. Yeah, exactly. So like it needs to work on many different browsers. Also many different breakpoints if you have like a tablet versions or mobile versions. Mm-hmm. And for that, one way to do it is obviously just like resize your Chrome window, that does the trick like on the simplest level. Mm-hmm. But we also use something called Browser Stack, where we're basically like remotely simulating different devices, like an actual iPhone, 14. And taking a look at it there, because it's happened in the past that the mobile version of desktop Chrome, actually it looks fine, but if you do the same thing on an Android phone mm-hmm. in Chrome, it actually looks different, and on iOS it can look also different. So that's another like part of a way. So it's a very like generic topic, like QA, and it like encompasses many different activities.
And is there any, skill set that people who who would apply?
No, I'm kidding, yeah.
No? No. Is there anything you are expecting from the people who would apply to this job to have it? Like, is there any, characteristics?
Yeah. it goes, I guess, even from the start, if you look at the name, like quality assurance, the person needs to have some sort of attention to detail. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily mean that he needs to be perfect. Like a lot of us are still learning and sort of like perfecting the techniques and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That's also a big part of the QA department we have in Apollo, that it doesn't really matter what project the person is working on, but we're trying to sort of have this standard among us, and like sharing the knowledge, and maybe let's say some person finds a cool new tool that we could use and we talk about it, and then maybe we just like add it to the standard. So of course you need to have some sort of like like OCD. Preconditions fulfilled, I guess, or predispositions. Yeah. Like for example, some attention to detail, definitely, because it's, I guess, in this industry, the technology is moving forward pretty fast. Mm-hmm. So another good quality I would say is, well, you kind of need to have the desire to learn or to like keep learning. And it's not like, yeah, I just learned this and then I'm done and I can keep doing that for the next 10 years. Well, yeah, I guess maybe to a certain degree, but definitely not, you're not going to be very good at the job, I guess, because in 10 years, yeah,
everything the technology is going to be.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. And like we're moving forward, we're upgrading to new tools quite a lot. And by saying, by we, I don't mean just QA, but in general, like in this, in the web development industry, I guess you could say.
Nice, nice. All right. So what would you recommend to anyone who is considering to join that? Is there any place where to start, like self-learning or something?
Yeah, I mean, that's nowadays, I would maybe be a bit careful about just like buying some courses on those different websites. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that they're bad, but a lot of the times, especially at first when you have no frame of reference, how can you tell that they're good or bad? Yeah, sure, they have user reviews, I know, but it could be user reviews from people who are also having no frame of reference. So it could be just, yeah, this person explains things very well, and that might be fine, but you're also paying, I don't know how many euro or dollars for something that's maybe a theory-wise all right, but not really how they do it in the real world. That, I guess, is a big thing, studying for any sort of certifications. You have stuff from Microsoft, which are definitely, and that's not QA specific, that's like in general, learning about the tools that we're using, and maybe some practices. It's always good to know what you're doing, at least on some level, but I would be very careful with just like trying to apply everything to the practice, especially like from those QA certifications. A lot of the times, even though they're getting updated, they, on paper, they work, but then every company and every project is a bit different and you have to apply it in a different way. So yeah, it can be very overwhelming in the beginning to just like buy 20 courses and go through them. So I would just say, honestly, and a lot of people hate this this opinion, but the best thing you can maybe do is just to browse, like even YouTube people talking about, like multiple, so you have multiple different sources, of course, talking about like software development lifecycle and some like QA techniques, and I would say, yeah, I guess techniques is the best word. I was trying to find a better one, but yeah, but just to get some sort of sense, what is it about? But right. Don't expect that it's going to be exactly like this when you join the company. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for the tips. And if we were speaking about like the versions of testing or the different aspects of testing, which is your favorite? Which one? What do you like to test?
Yeah, so I remember, because when I joined some other companies, I had nothing to do with this like visual, well, not visual testing, but this testing of front end. So actually testing if some component works differently and stuff like that. And the only thing I did was testing the data in backend, in APIs. And that may sound a bit like, it sounds interesting at first, but then it's a very repetitive thing to do, especially if it's the only thing you can do. So I would say, I'm sort of approaching your question from a different point of view. I would say what's not my favorite. Like that can get very boring, but I think that it's important to have like variety. If you just have one thing, it doesn't matter how interesting it is. I feel like in a couple of months, it's gonna get boring either way. So it's important to have some sort of like change, and that's why I think it's kind of cool here that we have different like areas of expertise, and not necessarily that you can go to, but that you need to go to, because that's just what we do. But yeah, all these, or most of these, accessibility, some functional testing or application logic as we call it, or some like visual testing, we do that in the automation. I would say And I think that's across the whole unit, across many different teams. We're trying to like push the automation as much as possible because obviously the industry is sort of demanding for it. And nothing, not to say that like manual testing is bad or anything, but if you think about it, if you have the time and means to automate something, even though it might take a lot of time at first, then it's there and you don't have to do it over and over. Whereas if you omit the automation and you have some long-term project, let's say, which requires you to retest some things after certain releases and stuff, yeah, doing it manually over and over.
Yeah. And the costs are much higher after that.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. And you know, it's like prone to human error, of course. If you're doing it like over and over again, you automate it in your brain and then you, I don't know, let's say you're not even paying that much attention because you've seen it 100 million times before. So I would say like automation in general, that's, again, it's all those things, but it's, you know, on like on another layer where basically you write some scripts. It's technically, well, it's, I would say, similar to development in terms of we're writing code in different languages using some frameworks, using stuff like that. It's like a, how to say it, very old questions like what's more complex, and I don't know. It's just like a different direction basically. But it's like maybe we don't know that much about some frameworks that developers need to use or some practices. We're trying to borrow as much as we can from that. So even though we don't need to, we kind of want to be able to deliver like clean code, not in the application itself, but in the tests themselves, because, you know, in a couple of months, someone might need to go and actually some refactor some things and change some things. And if it's a mess, well, then it's like better to throw it away and start over. Yeah. So you lose this like reusability anyway. So I would say that's my favorite, like, and obviously that's why, like, the QA engineer, that's part of my job to write and maintain some automation tests. Yeah. I would say that's like the most interesting to me.
That was a pretty comprehensive answer.
Yeah.
Nice.
How much time do we have?
It's getting a value. We have about half an hour. So that's cool. All right, so let's move to the next one then. And that is, how were your first years at Apollo? Since it was something that you kind of knew before, how was it to come to Apollo?
Right, so we're talking about Apollo. So let's say this 1 year, right? 1.5 year. Okay. It's very interesting because I knew, as I said, I knew a lot of people who are working here now from those like 6-7 years ago. But it's a very different, so I worked in Alpha before. I think that was even before exactly, and Apollo wasn't really there, but yeah, basically we worked with Kentico and all those different tools, and I never really worked with Sitecore, which is the like most used tool here in Apollo. And it was very interesting, like, especially because I still kept some contact with the guys from QA. So we talked about it frequently, and it's interesting that it works almost as if like it's like a tiny company inside a company. Or how to say it.
Need to mention that most of the QA guys are there for ages.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
That's a little tribe inside Actum.
Yeah. It's right. Yeah. And I think even like for the past year, we have gotten quite bigger as like a department. But it's very interesting. I like the, first of all, I guess the openness. That's definitely, and like the transparency in this, in like different things. For example, what we're having every week, this Apollo 300, right? That's pretty informative. Like, what's new, like everybody is up to speed, and it can mean everything, right? Like what's common, and for example, how Radek does the business situation. That's definitely cool to see, because I don't think that's like a, like automatic or given, like in general, you know, like in a lot of the companies, basically you have no idea what's going on and like what's on the horizon unless you're the person working, like, let's say in sales or something like that. So that's quite cool, I think, that we know what's in store for the company. Also, and that goes more, I guess, to the client, but of course, like, it's Apollo's, the reason we have this client is, you know, Apollo to thank for, I guess. So, that's also pretty good that we have a client like Christie's who is open to like suggestions. It's not about, hey, we're telling you how we want you to do things and you just do it. It's like a discussion.
Yeah.
And that's very cool. And this sort of communication also goes like in between members of Apollo, in my opinion. Like I've never felt that I cannot ask somebody something because, I don't know, let's say he's like too high up in the, you know, positions or something. Like I have to go through some sort of chain of like managers or something like that. Like it's very... Yeah, exactly. Like we, with Martin, right? Like we talk about different things all the time. Right. And like, and he's very open about that. Like if you have a question, just approach me and ask me, right? Like there's no need to write an email or something.
Someone told me like a few weeks ago that we have this startup mentality. But yeah. In our division, you can directly go to division manager and just director and just tell him whatever you wanted to tell him. That's pretty
exactly
nice.
Yeah.
There are no blockers.
Exactly.
And I'm master of asking stupid questions through the company, so you can trust me if I tell you that no one is really pissed off if you ask stupid questions. They are surprisingly really really lovely usually, and really like patient with me, so that's nice.
Oh, you're the master. I thought I was though.
No, me. I'm the master, and guys who are working with me, they know.
Precisely. I see. Okay.
What I'm talking about, I'm always asking the stupid question, but they are patiently just like, you know, explaining to me. So that's nice.
that's actually a thing that, yeah, first of all, it's awesome that it works like this. That's definitely not a like automatic standard, given thing. And also, yeah, you said one interesting thing that we see all the time, like when we are interviewing for like new QA members or something like that. And I had the same mentality, and I feel like what is stopping you in the beginning, and by saying in the beginning, it means, let's say you just finish school and you go to your first, second or third like job. And I kind of hate Czech Republic school system for that, because it just makes you feel like an idiot. It makes you feel like asking questions is bad, because it tells the teacher or the professor or whoever that you don't know, that you don't understand anything.
You're not prepared enough, right?
Exactly. You're not prepared enough and you're going to get punished for it. And I feel like that's such a backwards thinking, but it's everywhere. And I see it in almost everybody, like around, you know, like 20. That just, let's say, came out of school or something. And I know that I felt the same way. And yeah, it's much worse then if you are afraid to ask something and try to figure it out on your own. And then a week later, you actually have to go to your manager and say, hey, I screwed up. Like, we're, you know, behind schedule now.
Which could be like solved within 5 minutes in discussion with your teammate, right?
But yeah, exactly. But it's so weird. Like, I remember even in high school, like you do this and the teacher looks at you like you're an idiot. Yeah. And also the other kids laugh at you like you're an idiot, right? So it goes even like this. I know I didn't mean to turn so philosophical, but it just pisses me off sometimes because I see it everywhere and I know exactly where it's coming from. And it's like one of the worst obstacles to get over, I would say.
But I
beginning.
Think
that's
it
what's
still
stopping you.
Like lives in you, because in my case I was going from like zero to, you know, project management, and for me it's like I didn't study that, so for me it was like completely new field. And at first I was so afraid to ask, really, guys, what are you doing there, because I couldn't understand there, right?
Yeah.
that's nice shortcut, whatever you're saying. I don't understand it. I can, like, the general, I could understand, but how it works, just show me that. And I must say that, like, all of the guys I was working with, they were just like, come on, that's nothing bad. I can explain it within like 5 minutes. I was like, really? Because I probably, I don't know if I should know that. But at least I will learn something new. So yeah, I would say in general, the people within Apollo are like supportive, really. Because when I just once said that I would like to learn something new, they were like, I don't know, 3-4 people just like offering me where I can learn it or some help. So that's nice.
Yeah, and that's awesome. And that goes, it's the exact opposite of what people are afraid, yeah?
Yeah.
If we go back to the like school, university thing, there you ask and you're like punished for it somehow. And here, yeah, I've never actually had a person have a problem with explaining to me something that maybe I should know, but I've never, you know, let's say worked with this on this project. So yeah, it's really cool.
All right, so I think that will be enough for today's episode. And let me ask you about your hobbies. What are you doing when you're off duty?
When I'm off duty, okay. That's a tricky question because I have this problem with having a lot of different hobbies that necessarily don't even like go together. And I have moments when I just need to be doing a lot of different things just to keep me like occupied and not bored. Yeah. But then I have problems with actually like going through with a lot of them. So in like reality, how that can look is,
you have,
I don't know,
equipment
I have
for
this...
everything, right?
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. A couple of financial decisions, like bad financial decisions have been made because of this for sure. Yeah. I'm not talking about anything specific here, but, I, for example, always enjoyed this like video editing and, you know, playing video games.
Mm-hmm.
So I like decided to maybe just like merge those two together. But the thing is that I was doing that for a while and then I completely stopped for a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that like I was bored of it and I didn't ever want to see it again. It's just I picked up something else in the meantime.
Yeah.
And that's the issue. Yeah, that I never like put. I mean, you cannot really like go through till the end with something because it never really ends.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, let's say learning a new skill, right? Like I started learning Spanish like years and years and years ago, and I left it, and it's like in the very, very base level. I don't think I'm able to really speak now because I don't remember the vocabulary. But yeah,
Daniel picked up something else. He will definitely go out and test you. But yeah, I have the very same thing. But for me, is I always like, I don't know, I see it. I'm like really enthusiastic about it. I start with it and then I get like a bit better, you know. So you are just like thinking about, maybe I should buy this or I should have better equipment or something. And the thing is, not just the bad financial, you know, decisions, but also the storage.
because then
you go like, maybe I will do this in the winter. It's more like, you know, cozy thing. And this will be for the summer. So yeah, then I do have like, I don't know, 5 boxes of the yarn which are ready for crocheting. Then I have also the, you know, painting waiting for me to make some artwork. For a couple of years. So works.
For example, this painting, drawing, like I started doing some like digital art, like on a very low level, but I was learning through some tutorials and stuff. I have like a tiny iPad with this iPencil or whatever it's called. I'm not an Apple user, so this was very confusing to me, but yeah. And I did it for like half a year, and now I am not even sure where it is. So yeah.
But beware, if you have original Apple Pencil and not charging it, it won't be working.
Mm. Oh, okay. So maybe I don't even have a choice now.
Just a little like note.
Yeah, that's probably going to be my case as well. So, yeah.
Okay. Just in case you want to ensure that it is still working, try that.
I'll try to look for it. Yeah,
maybe it will get you to another, you know, piece of digital art because you will have it in your hand, so the creativity will be you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I'm just going to get like a new wave again and abandon something else in the process.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah. So it's like very different things. And it goes from, I used to always want to learn fencing. Not like the sports fencing, but like mm-hmm. historical fencing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always like in the back of my mind. I never did it. Never even like signed up for it
mm-hmm.
for some reason. But yeah, it's like a lot of ideas this way. A lot of it is concerned like around or you know, goes around this like technical stuff. So mm-hmm. stuff on the PC, whether it's, you know, playing video games or editing some videos. I also like, I have a DSLR camera, which I haven't picked up for like 7 months now, since we're on the topic, yeah. And I used to have fun just like taking some photographs when we were like out with friends on some mountain trips or something mm-hmm. like that, or even like videos that I could also edit later, and stuff like that, yeah, to have some memories. So yeah, it's very different, like very different broad spectrum of, mm-hmm. of things. Yeah,
I'm just thinking maybe we could do a list of things you have and then make a internal project for Apple around it.
Oh, okay.
So you have like opportunity to use it.
Oh, know? Right.
It yeah, will bring in value. You will be satisfied. The things won't be lying just around.
Right.
And
yeah,
it will be two in one, you know. That's how I get
true,
this podcast.
True.
It was just an idea.
Okay. Oh yeah, I mean that sounds good. Yeah, maybe we could try that.
All right. So, is there anything that stays with you like for a longer time, which you enjoy like frequently?
I mean the like video games and stuff that's mm-hmm. been on and off for a while. I'm a big fan of like video games, of movies and TV series, also of different like fantasy and sci-fi books.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like I've been going through like phases. Like now I'm in a phase where I don't really feel like watching anything or reading mm-hmm. anything, so I play some games. And then, you know, mm-hmm. a couple months later, I'm like, I don't feel like doing anything like actively in a video game, so I'm just gonna watch some TV series, for example, like big Marvel fan, Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, like all these different like nerdy kinds of things. Yeah. that's been there forever, on and off, so that for
right,
sure.
Right. And which gaming do you prefer, PC or, you know,
oh yeah,
consoles?
Yeah, I'm a PC master race. Yeah. Okay. I don't know why there is such a like discourse between this, or maybe it's just like on the meme level, but I used to, well, I still actually have a PlayStation 2,
mm-hmm.
the original one, without the, after they started doing the slim versions, I don't have that. I have the original one. And I'm actually now like, I found it when I was cleaning some old boxes and stuff, throwing some unused stuff out, as mm-hmm. we just talked about. And I found it and I was like keeping it on display. And now I'm thinking of actually buying some sort of adapter so I could connect it to like the newer TVs. And maybe replay some of the old games. That would be fun.
Yeah.
Just like for the nostalgia sake, you know. But besides that, I've always like been playing games on PC.
I have the same issue with Nintendo 64.
Oh,
which
yeah.
I'm keeping. Also with, I don't know, like 15 original games. And those are the games you played as a kid, right? So you have emotional attachment to that. So yeah.
Exactly.
That's... But I mostly grew up on consoles. We do have the Xbox and the Switch. But yeah, on PC I played like, I don't know, maybe just the Counter-Strike and Bitkong, nothing more.
Yeah. It's yeah, but it's not that I have anything like against controller. I believe many games you can tell that they have been developed for consoles mm-hmm, first mm-hmm. and then maybe ported to PC. So the port kind of sucks. Like to control the game with mouse and keyboard, it's just it's not built for it. And yeah, so I have like an Xbox controller that I can just plug into PC and play some of the games, like some of the jumping ones, for example, Ori and the Blind Forest and stuff like that, with a controller, because it's, yeah, so much better. But I also understand the fact that, you know, it's cool to just like sit on a couch, you know, just like cozy and just play a game on your TV. That's like, I understand that, yeah.
I think the I think the main thing in my scenario is that we had one PC, and my brother was like the fan of these train simulators, which takes for ages to build and then ages to run the train on the tracks and just look at it, you know. So there wasn't a place to play like in two on a PC. Maybe we did like these you know, how you have this divided keyboard, so that that was probably the thing, but otherwise we were playing together on console, and he was watching the trains until midnight.
I think that I basically like similar case of the reason we had a PC when I was a kid was because my mom is a journalist and she used it like for writing articles and stuff, so that's the only reason why like we had a, like, otherwise we probably, I wouldn't have the chance to like even have like play some of the games. So like very tech oriented from the beginning because of work reasons, but you know, you know, I could at least like have some old school RuneScape and stuff like that play there. I mean, that's a browser thing, but still.
And the other games, you know, like Prince of Persia, played within the school hours in PC educational hours or whatever it was.
Educational hours. You mean the old, like the I think it was like 97 or something, like it was the first Prince of Persia. I remember.
But we actually had a cool teacher. He was actually guiding us through the levels. So
Oh, yeah, we actually had that in the elementary school in like my first or second year. We had a like an optional thing you could take, which was called computers. And I think my parents thought that it's going to be something like learning some basics with the computers. What it actually was is that the teacher came in the classroom, the beginning, and had this like different, well, it wasn't CDs, right? It was the other thing, like floppy disks. And he was basically just like handing him out, and we had like Need for Speed 1, Prince of Persia 1, I don't even remember, some tanks, something. And basically, yeah, everybody, you know, picked their choice. And played for 45 minutes and then it was done. It was very good class, actually. I learned a lot from that. I believe that might have been my first like exposure. So around like six years, 6 years old.
That Need for Speed reminded me, I have seen the videos of like, I cannot really understand how we could tell what is in front of us in those like pixels, because you never know if it was like house, another car, or tree, or whatever. Until you were close enough.
That's true,
But we played it anyways, and it was then, it was a marvel of, you know, of the latest technical, you know.
Exactly,
outburst.
And even like, obviously, like even now it's just nostalgia cool thing, but back then it was like that's the only thing we got, so like we didn't know there could be anything that's more realistic and maybe less 2D or something like that.
And something that, then you didn't, you see the like with the better, right, with the better graphics, and you say I know, I can remember the moments when we were talking about how sharp it is and how nice it is, and now I can see it and it's like
it's pretty bad.
It's embarrassing
for today's standards.
you were like crazy about it, right?
Old,
getting old, right? Now kids are having the VR goggles and so on, and we were playing with the dots on the screen.
That's a thing that even I feel like I'm out of it already. Like,
and the floppies keeping... and the games. Come on, that was for a whole suitcase, right?
It was like, I was about to say that, like, during installation, it was like, please insert floppy disk 17 out of 34. It's like, what?
Then it get better with the CDs, right? It was just like three.
But still, like, even now, for nowadays, like, person must be weird. Like, what? You had to have a game on multiple CDs and like swap it in installation.
That was good the times, ancient times.
But good times. Like, it was we were happy about it.
Yeah. Because it was like, you know, bought with the sweat and tears.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It felt like deserved.
Yeah.
Like you deserve it.
At least my parents did make me feel that, so it wasn't for
yeah,
free,
right.
You know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
First, you have to clean everything. Yeah, clean everything. Have your work homework done, and then
yes, then you could play something
like,
yeah,
for an hour. Right.
For an hour, yeah.
All right, all
yeah,
right.
I mean, that's the part that I don't miss. Yeah.
Yeah, that's, you know, we grew up, so now we are masters of our time. It wasn't like
yeah,
that.
Now we're free. Yeah. Now we're free
and
to
what
waste
are
our
you
time.
Doing with your free time? That's the better question, right? Maybe sometimes I could use some time manager. All right. So back to the traditional questions. And that is, what are you reading? And if you are reading, usually, but you already mentioned that. So what are your favorite books?
Yeah. Like, I'm able to read, yeah, I learned, but right now, yeah, it's been a while since I read any book, but like, yeah, if I were to look to my right, where I have like a bookcase of mm-hmm. stuff that I've been reading, it's basically mostly filled with fantasy stuff. Mm-hmm. It goes from like the classics, like Lord of the Rings, mm-hmm. to all the like editions of the Song of Ice and Fire, so mm-hmm. like yeah, those who don't know, that's like the books okay. for the TV series Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones is actually the first book as well, but yeah, the series just follows them. I read that like a couple times before it was cool. No, not really. Like I learned about it through the TV series, but No. Like I learned about it through the TV series, but mm-hmm. then I read all the books, and then I was like just waiting for the series to come out to like see how something that was in the book actually gets interpreted in the TV series. Besides that, I used to have some like Ranger's Apprentice, which was quite like lighthearted fantasy, mm-hmm. And it's like quite shorter books. And of course, yeah, like I grew up on Harry Potter, like that was my childhood.
Right.
So, yeah, I have all of those. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but that's still kind of fantasy. So I would say it's like 99% fantasy. Mm-hmm. I have some sci-fi in terms of some Star Wars encyclopedia and stuff like that. Okay. But I don't really have like the, you know, like, how to say it, like some philosophical and like actual like what is it called in English, stuff that we had to read for graduation in high school basically. I don't have any of that right now. I read that's it exactly. But I don't have it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I read so a that's what I go them, for but never made it to my library. Got it. All right, and yeah. What are your favorites then?
My favorite from the books.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it would be between Harry Potter, but that's just because it's such a big part of the childhood that even if it's not the best, it's still like very nostalgic and I sometimes read it again. And this, and I would say like the Game of Thrones books. Yeah, like that was like my first entry into this like adult fantasy. It's like it's not a fairy tale, but it's quite realistic and like quite bloody and gruesome sometimes. And yeah, that was pretty cool, especially like reading it in English on Kindle. Like learned a lot of like words, and yeah, it was like my first time reading like a book that's 900 pages long basically.
Yeah, and I like how fantasy gets complex. It's like well described for realm, so that's nice. All right, so we get the books, then I believe we are on the last part, which everyone loves, and that's if you have any wisdom you want to share with our audience. So there goes wise Richard.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Like, does it have to be wise if it's wisdom? But I remember that I forgot who said it, if it was someone like where I heard it actually, but there was this discussion, I think, on some podcast where, you know, they were like answering the audience's question and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it was a podcast about like lifestyle, or I guess the, yeah, like
self-improvement,
basically to have a healthy lifestyle, like mentally basically, mm-hmm. to keep yourself like sane in the world, right? And people are saying like, I have like issues with like depression or issues with being like not being able to do anything productive during the day. I'm always so tired, and like when I'm not, the only thing I do is like I sit and watch a TV series for 9 hours, like binge watch TV series, or play a game for 12 hours. It's like I feel like I'm wasting so much time. And this person said a thing that I think it's quite cool, that people don't realize, and the sentence was, time you enjoy wasting is not a wasted time.
Yeah,
I'm not sure like if it was a quote from someone like, mm-hmm. yeah, I don't know, I just remember I heard it on this podcast, and I think it's quite cool because people don't realize it is like, there's work, there's like some professional career stuff, but there's also needs to be like an entertainment. It's like to put the whole, to do the whole circle basically. You cannot do just one, you need to kind of like do bits and pieces of all. So basically it was just, don't worry about it, it's fine. If you like it, just do it.
You can sit on your couch for months just like, you know, watching binge watching all the series you haven't seen yet. Or rewatching them. That's even better.
Or rewatching. That's the worst part.
But we all have been there, you know.
yep.
All right, so thank you, Richard, for closing message, and once again for joining me on today's session. It was a pleasure and it was fun, and I definitely learned why you chose the QA and why you're such a bully.
Thank you very much, it was a pleasure, thanks for inviting me. I hope that people will not just think that QAs are bullies, but you know, the analogy is there, I'm just saying, that's all.
Alright, I hope that audience liked it too. If you have guys any questions or suggestions, let us know. And also, as usual, I will link the books that Richard mentioned in our Instagram, and you can find it later. Also, I would ask Richard if he can do a playlist of top 20 songs for next Monday, so we can listen to that on our Spotify channel. And I wish you all wonderful rest of the week, and stay tuned for the next episode. Bye bye.
Thank you very much. Bye bye. Have a great day. Apollo out.